everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. Now, I have a really important show for you today, one that will be of interest to many of you, because when you lose someone you love, everything changes, and the grief can be overwhelming and can bring everything in your life to a standstill. And whether or not you can free yourself from the grief depends on your capacity to find the resources you need, both internal and external, to help you cope, develop resilience, grow, and even thrive. My guest today is Dr. Sherry Cormier. She is a psychologist, consultant, and public speaker, formerly on the faculty at the University of Tennessee and West Virginia University. She has co-written and co-produced more than 50 training videos for Cengage Learning. And in her new book, Sweet Sorrow, Finding Enduring Wholeness After Loss and Grief, Dr. Cormier writes about her own experience with loss and combines it with proven strategies for overcoming the pain of grief. Listeners, if you want to learn more about Dr. Cormier or her new book, go to SherryCormierAuthor.com. So welcome to the program, Dr. Cormier. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Terry, so much. I'm so delighted and excited to be here and talking with you and your listeners today.
Well, we are glad you're here as well, because it's such an important topic, one that we all experience over our life course. But before we get to the strategies or how to cope with loss, tell us what motivated you to write this book, Sweet Sorrow, and why you picked that particular title, Sweet Sorrow.
Oh, that's such a great question. I really appreciate that question. Well, a decade ago, I suffered two really big personal losses. I lost my dad. He was 90, and that was expected. But 3 months after my dad passed, my husband, my beloved soulmate husband, died 3 months after my dad.
And he had been, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and he had been diagnosed with stage 4 terminal cancer about 6 months before that. And then in the last decade, you know, I've just had a series of you know, increasing losses. A few years after that, my mother died. Then my dog that I rescued to sort of provide some companionship after my husband died, my dog died. And then about 2 years ago, my only sibling died.
And, Sherry, you know, you've had a lot of losses,
yes,
one after another.
Kind of all at once, right?
Right?
And, you know, Dr. Terry, what I discovered is, even though I'm a psychologist and a bereavement trauma specialist, living with your own loss is not quite the same as working with other people, because, you know, when it happens to you, you're sort of on the end of it, a different end of it from talking with other people and helping them through it. And the reason I wrote Sweet Sorrow is when I was going through all this, I could not really find the right book for me. I wanted a book that was hopeful, right, that was inspirational, that gave me some tools. I just couldn't find that book, and I waited intentionally to write Sweet Sorrow because I feel like a lot of these books are written in sort of the immediate aftermath of a loss event, and I think you get a very different tone or story in those books, I wanted to really be able to show my readers more about the oscillations and the kind of ups and downs of grief over a long period of time, rather than, well, how do you feel immediately afterwards?
Right.
Yeah, and then the title, well, I love that you asked me about that.
Right, because, you know, it's sweet sorrow, and
right.
I kept thinking, what is sweet about loss?
Right, what's sweet about sorrow? So, well, I have a couple responses to that.
Mm-hmm.
One is, the title came to me in a dream. I dreamed that's what should be the name of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of dreams. I've had a lot of visitation dreams in the last decade from my husband particularly. So I've really learned to sort of trust the messages in the dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, my yoga teacher said a couple weeks ago, right when the book was coming out, she said, I love this title because sweet and sorrow represents the yin and the yang of life.
Mm.
You know, and I thought that's so true because heartbreak and hope are not mutually exclusive. We can be heartbroken in our loss and still be hopeful.
Mm.
We can be sorrowful and still find things to savor about the sweetness of life. And that's actually very important.
And I like that, because what you said when you experienced loss is that you couldn't find a book that told you about those two sides of the same coin.
Right.
And so really what you're saying then is your book does that. It shows you about loss and grief, but it also shows you about hope.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And can you tell us, before we get to some of the book too, Dr. Cormier, what's your life like now? Has it changed as a result of either writing the book or over time?
Yes, yes. It's changed in some ways somewhat dramatically, in some ways not dramatically. One of the things that is different for me is I did make a geographic move. Now, I did not do this right away because the general advice is, and I do agree with it, that when you're in the midst of active grief, your problem-solving skills are not that strong. I mean, you're sort of going by your emotions. And so that's why we always say, well, don't make huge decisions in the midst of active grief. But about 4 years after my husband died, I made a geographical move. I stopped teaching at West Virginia University.
Mm-hmm.
I closed my adult private practice there. And I really did then decide that I've been living in the mountains and they're wonderful and I miss them. But I wanted to move near the beach and be by the water. And I also had located a writing coach, and I was fortunate enough to be able to join a writing group after I moved. So I had this container of wonderful women that are still networked. You know, we're still networked together, and they really helped me birth this book.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that probably is not different, I am still a widow. I'm still single. I'm not partnered. Well, I'd like to be, but I haven't, I don't want to be partnered with just anyone.
Right. So it's really all about that you want, but you have not found the person for you.
Yes. I made a decision about 5 years ago to go on Match,
mm-hmm.
which was huge.
Right.
I've got two adult daughters. Neither of them have ever experienced online dating.
Mm-hmm.
So for their mom to be doing that, they were sort of like oh my
wow,
gosh.
Wait a minute. Right. I agree. You know, I'm a huge advocate, Jerry, of online dating, and especially Match and Our Time, which is for singles 45 and older.
Yeah.
But do you think that's important in the process of dealing with grief and loss?
Well, what I think it may or may not be, where it could be important is in this respect, Dr. Dr. Terry. To me, the single most important thing that really helps us heal and grow and maybe even thrive from loss, and I do think there are many ways in which my life does feel like it's thriving now. I think the single most important thing in that journey is to develop really good close connections with other people.
Yes, so, I agree, by the way. I totally agree. But you're probably going to say that that doesn't have to be romantic connections. It can be friendships. It can be work colleagues. It can be relationships with your children.
With your children, your family, your cousins, your nieces, your nephews, your, you know, whoever is in your family of origin, or in my case, because my nuclear family all has passed over, you know, then it also becomes your family of choice. It could be a group affiliation. You know, for some people, it's their meditation group, their yoga class, their church group, their community cultural group that they go to. So, you know, it could be groups. Many people find Dr. Terry, a lot of comfort, especially in the immediate aftermath, with a support group for grief, because we do know that there's something really profoundly helpful about connecting with people that really get what you are going through, that really understand it. And even now in bereavement, we're finding that really diverse support groups don't work all that well. For example, what I mean by that is if you put someone like myself who's experienced bereavement because I lost a partner or a spouse, if you put people like us in with people, let's say, who've lost a son or a daughter due to an overdose of something like an opioid, that's not particularly... they don't particularly find help from one another, because those losses are very different even. They're things that they feel troubled about are different.
So I like that a lot. And I think that's really important, Sherry, to tell listeners again that first, if I had to go back, the single most, that what you said was the single most important thing that helps someone thrive or survive is to develop close connections. Mm-hmm. And those close connections can be to groups or support groups, but it's important to go to a support group with people who are experiencing the same type of loss as
or
you.
Similar. Yeah, somewhat similar. And so, you know, you might be able to be in a support group with people who've lost a dear friend, things like that, but there are different kinds of support groups, and you might try to look for one that seems to be comprised of people who are on a similar journey.
Very important tip, by the way. That's really important, because they have support groups in many communities that are do any loss. And so what you're really saying is go to a support group with people who have had a similar loss as you. What are some other tools, Dr. Cormier, to heal from devastating loss?
Well, where to start? So we've talked about social support and getting connected, and that would be one thing. I would say another really important one, and these are just things that I sort of got from the literature and also tested out myself, though, Dr. Terry, education, and I'm using the word broadly. I really mean curiosity. Curiosity and learning. It's hard to be very sad when you're engaged with learning something new. It really is. It's almost impossible. If you think about it, if, you know, let's say you go to, you've never been to Zumba, and you go, you say, well, I'm going to go do some Zumba, or you want to learn to play pickleball, but you've never played pickleball, or you want to take up golf, and you've never golfed. If you think about it, when you go get those lessons, whatever they are, maybe you want to learn a new language. When you are learning something that's new, you are activating a different part of your brain. And really, when you're involved in the learning of the new, you are not actively dwelling on the loss. You're not actively feeling sad because you are so focused on learning whatever it is that you want to be able to do. And you kind of get excited about it. Like, oh, I'm excited that I'm going to be able to know how to speak Italian now, or I'm excited that I'm going to be able to go to this dance class and not stumble all over and, love the Zumba music and know what I'm going to be able to do, maybe some yoga poses. So get curious. Getting curious is a huge tool as an antidote to sorrow. And
I love that, Dr. Cormier. I love it. And especially what you're saying is to do something new. But I can hear listeners, as you were saying that, they're saying, but I don't want to get out. I mean, I don't feel good about myself. How am I going to go to a new activity like, Spanish class, Italian class, a Zumba class, as you said, when people are all happy and optimistic and I'm not?
Yeah. Well, and, I would say, give yourself a break. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be out of your house, although that those things kind of are like triple tools, because right. If you get out of your house and let's say you go to hypothetically, you learn to play pickleball or tennis or go to a dance class, A, you're with other people. B, you're moving your body, which is very good for grief, because grief is a very heavy emotion, and moving your body in any kind of way, whether it's taking a hike or riding a bike or kayaking or dancing or whatever you can do, will sort of help to sort of lift some of the heaviness you're feeling. And you're learning something new. So I like that model because it's like a triple tool. But if you really don't feel that you're able to do that, one thing you could do in the privacy of your own home that I think, again, is a great thing for learning and curiosity, do what we're doing, you and I, Dr. Terry, find a radio show, find a podcast. That's inspirational. Inspiration is another great tool for healing from grief. So find something that you could listen to that is really very, like an uplifting podcast where you're also learning something new.
And well, so you're telling us lots of great tips. So curiosity, learning something new, moving your body, but inspirational as well. And some of those podcasts like this one might also be a form of social support. So you've
and
got
a form of social support
tips,
as
right?
well. Right? Exactly. When you do feel like you're a little more able to get out of the house, sometimes people have found great benefit in taking a class at their local community college or senior center or their community art center, going to a lecture, going to a concert, taking advantage of things from their local libraries. So those are other great things where, again, you're getting some social support and you're also learning something new.
All really good strategies. Did you have another one?
Well, and I was also going to say, and that this might be a little, again, your listeners might be going, oh, this is going to be hard, but the practice, developing spiritual practices, whether it's meditation or mindfulness, I am a big believer in the spiritual practice of gratitude. And again, you can be grief-stricken and still feel grateful. Just this morning, I got some news that made me feel sad. I got some news about somebody, and I immediately went to feeling sad. And then I immediately went to thinking about something that I feel grateful for. And I think that gratitude is a really important practice in the aftermath of grief, because again, this practice changes our brain. It creates new neural pathways that change our, you know, really elevate our mood. I recommend getting up in the morning and writing down something in the morning and then again at the in the evening that you feel grateful for or you feel like is a blessing in your life.
Mm-hmm. And like what would be an example for listeners, Sherry?
Well, so this morning, I'll just give my own personal example. Mm-hmm. I got some news about someone that I thought someone close to me that is actually a really important part of my support system that's going to be leaving. And so I felt kind of dejected because, you know, I've gotten a little dependent on this person for social support and for, you know, we all need confidants in our life, you know, people to confide in, and living alone and being unpartnered, this person, you know, really has been an important person for me. We've been good friends. And, you know, of course, I know when someone leaves, you have Facebook and you have phone and FaceTime. Mm-hmm. It's not quite the same, though, as being able to just go out and have lunch or take a walk with them. So I felt sort of dejected about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I immediately went to, what am I going to pay attention to? What am I going to notice in my life right now that is good?
Mm. And what did you write down?
What did I write down? Well, the first thing I wrote down was that outside my front window, there's a beautiful blue sky with a gorgeous tree of red, orange, and yellow hues.
Ooh, I love it. I love that. So at the same time that you were feeling sadness, you said, what am I grateful for? Now, Sherry, we only have a few minutes left. The time goes by so quickly.
It does.
Tell listeners, how can they tell when the shock of grief is fading and when the healing is beginning? And in about 2 minutes, very briefly.
Okay, well, that's a great question. So when the shock is fading and when healing is starting, you know, you'll feel less numb, mm-hmm. because initially when you're in shock, there's a lot of numbness. And you may feel, like you mentioned, Dr. Terry, earlier, when you're still in the shock part, you may not feel like getting out of your house. You may feel like staying under, you know, some friends or some clients have said to me, I just want to get back under the covers and pull the covers up over my head. So when that shock is dissipating and you're moving into healing, you're going to feel like you can be more uncovered, both maybe figuratively and literally. And, you know, you will feel more, you will have more energy.
Mm-hmm.
You probably won't be crying as much, although you may still be crying. You might feel more like getting out of your house and doing things. You will start to realize how important things are in your life that maybe you didn't notice before, like your relationships with people, like spirituality. You might start to emphasize start. You might start to entertain new possibilities about your life because, in a way, when we've had a big loss, even if it's a loss of a person or something like even a precious job, something in us dies too. And so part of how you grow and part of when you move into healing is you say to yourself, what is it in me that is yearning to come out, that is yearning to be born?
Mm-hmm.
And
that
then
is
you,
great. Yes.
You know,
sorry. Were you going to say one more thing? Because I just heard when you're yearning to learn that's a really key point or way, signal to know that you're beginning to heal. Sherry, thank you so much. You've given us so many tools to heal from devastating loss, strategies where we can cope with that grief, as well as the idea that there are two sides of the same coin, that you can feel grief and still feel gratitude, spiritual-like, as well as hopeful for your future. Yes. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for asking me. I've loved being on your show so much. And
thank
I feel
you.
Grateful for you and your show and the work that you do in the world.
Oh, I appreciate that. That's so wonderful. And listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Dr. Sherry Cormier, and that is spelled C-O-R-M-I-E-R, and her new book, Sweet Sorrow, please go to SherryCormierAuthor.com. And I highly recommend her book and checking out her website. As always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help your relationships be always the best they can be. So listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.